Welcome to Tribe Talk, the bi-monthly podcast by Tribe of Women. I'm Amy Robinson, founder of Tribe of Women. During each episode, I'll be joined by members of my tribe as we hear from guest speakers and powerful women who connect to our mission to establish cultures of women supporting women and recognizing more good men. We will also tell stories of you, our listeners, working in your communities to support your tribes and to answer your questions about how to grow the Tribe of Women together. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get started.
Welcome to Tribe Talk. I'm Laurie Marshall, your co-host with Tribe of Women founder Amy Robinson. We're broadcasting from the pod at The Artist Evolution, a full-service marketing group, one of our generous podcast sponsors, and obviously podcast gurus. You can find them at theartistevolution.com. Hello, Amy.
Hey, Laurie. What an amazing month we've had.
Month, yes. But I think we can easily say that so far, it's been a pretty amazing year.
True. And it doesn't look like any of the amazingness will be slowing down anytime soon.
No, it doesn't. Our listeners should fasten their seatbelts because they are helping us take off by sharing this podcast and supporting us through Patreon and giving us feedback and suggestions for podcast guests through our podcast survey that they are finding at tribeofwomen.com. So thank you, and please keep it up.
Yes, please. We're also being supported by a tribe of people on the ground who invite us to participate in events that are making a difference for women.
Definitely. That's how we found our next podcast guest.
Yes, an ambitious group of local women invited us to be part of a screening of a documentary about women entrepreneurs, which, you know, is close to my heart.
Well, even though I haven't really thought of myself as an entrepreneur, the movie Dream Girl opened my eyes to the fact that anyone putting ideas out there into the world is totally an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know very well, being an entrepreneur is quite the journey.
Quite.
And one of our discoveries together has been the power and influence films can have in the lives of women.
Too true. The way women and girls are portrayed in the media and film has a direct impact on how we see ourselves and each other. And one of the film genres we have discovered to be particularly important are documentaries. Just this year, we've promoted and supported several women-made films and are finding that they tell the truest stories of women. And not only that, they are identifiable. In other words, we can see ourselves in them. And that in itself is uplifting and empowering.
Which is why today's guests are very exciting for us.
Exactly. Today, we are pleased to have Erin Bagwell, founder and producer of the movie Dream Girl. She is featured in Oprah's Super Soul 100 as a woman with a story to tell. She's author of the blog Feminist Wednesday and raised $100,000 in 30 days to support the making of her dream film, Dream Girl. Hi, Erin.
Hi, thanks so much for having us.
Oh, we're excited to have you. And because the film is in full swing distribution, we also have our lovely Canadian imported to New York Dream Girl team member, Diana Matthews, with you today. So welcome to you both.
Hi, thank you so much.
We like to begin at the beginning. So what are the origins of this film, the story behind the story, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I've been really interested in movie making since I was a little girl. I've been editing since I was like 13 years old. I love storytelling. I studied film in college. I had a dual degree in video and design. So it's something that I've been really attracted to and interested in. And it wasn't until I moved to New York City. And, you know, a couple of things kind of happen simultaneously as they do when really big things come our way. I was working a job in the advertising industry that I hated, like absolutely hated, feeling really unseen, feeling really underestimated. And in addition to that, I was being sexually harassed at my job. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, which was horrible. And so then I became like really obsessed with feminism and learning about gender roles and deconstructing the narratives that women in the workplace get. And being a feminist kind of gave me the confidence to start my own feminist storytelling blog and to really go after the stories of women that we don't hear a lot about. And I think I really just wanted to feel like my experience was validated. I wanted to feel less alone in what I was going through. And so I started my own blog and really became interested in wanting to tell women's stories on a bigger scale. And, you know, I have this whole background in film and I was like, what can I do to elevate the blog and create a product and you know, how can I kind of combine my two passions of filmmaking and feminism? And, you know, I got the courage to quit my job and work freelance and was really open to figuring out what the next step was going to be. And I got the idea to make a movie about female entrepreneurs. And really, from there, it kind of snowballed. You know, I started talking about it. I started planning, you know, what would this film look like? What would it feel like? What would we call it? How would I get funding for it? And kind of that little idea really sparked and really grew. And thankfully, we did a Kickstarter campaign that took around 6 months to put all together. And we raised $100,000 in 30 days to produce the film. So that was really kind of the beginning of having everything spark and getting this movement going.
Well, I'm really glad that you mentioned the 6 months prior to the 30 days. And the reason I say that is because I think that part of entrepreneurship is the facade of the hard work it really takes to do what entrepreneurs do. And so I'm glad that you put that out there because there's a lot of groundwork that goes into entrepreneurship and a lot of risk taking and just and a lot of not knowing what we're doing, right?
Oh my God, absolutely. I mean, I was going back, Diana and I were laughing because I was looking at an interview I did with Marie Forleo today, and it was horrible. Like, the questions I asked were, like, very, I called myself a baby entrepreneur. Like, there was no grounding, there was no experience. I kept saying, like, cool, after, like, every question, because I think I was so nervous. And I was, like, pulling my hair out watching this footage, and Diana and I were just laughing, because it's, like, we grow so much, you know? That's just right. Part of the process is you just don't know what you're doing in the beginning.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about, let's go back to your little story about the feminism and connecting with feminism. One of the things that we talk about a lot is how feminism has somehow become the F word. Especially when we're talking with younger women or younger women are talking to us, young women, and I'm talking, you know, anywhere from high school to just kind of early career maybe. And just curious about where you think that happened and why, and are we starting to turn that around a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a tough question. I think it depends, like, on your family experience, to be honest with you, because I was raised by really strong women, but my mom didn't self-identify as a feminist until recently, so I wasn't really exposed to feminism, I think. You know, I remember learning about Gloria Steinem in high school, you know, and being quasi-interested in those rights. But I think as a white woman, you know, we carry so much privilege throughout the world. And through my high school and college experiences, I really wasn't discriminated too much. And it really wasn't until I entered the workforce that kind of my world got turned upside down and I really understood what it meant to feel marginalized. Which is insane, right? Because I'm, you know, a white woman, and I've been walking through this body for, you know, until my 20s, and I hadn't experienced that. And people, you know, from the womb have those experiences. So it was such a privilege in a way to not identify as a feminist, to not understand, you know, that we need more rights, that we need to be more seen, and, you know, not only just be not underestimated, but to be paid equal. And all the other things that go along with it. So, I don't know, Diana, what was your feminist? Because your mom is a feminist, right?
So. Yeah, I was raised, I think my mom kind of kept planting seeds to really identify with the movement from the get-go. But Aaron and I have talked about this a lot, where we felt angry for many years and were not able to label or name that anger. Like, we didn't know why we felt that way, and it really took feminism and kind of embracing that term and defining it for ourselves to kind of deal with that anger and work through some of the issues that we were facing every day, consciously or not. And I think that was something that was a really big wake-up call for me, was to actually identify and name what I was feeling and realize that other women were feeling it too.
Yeah, the consciously or not is a really good point. And I think sometimes we also, especially if we're in the working world at any point in time, feel like when something does happen, we kind of question, like, did that just happen? Is that for real? And we kind of question ourselves for a while and kind of try to justify it or figure out, you know, you talked about sexual harassment and discrimination. And there's so often when we don't really even want to believe that it's happening. And so that's it.
Well, and how many times does a victim come forward and then suddenly all these other people go, oh, yeah, that's happened to me, because we all just feel like it just happens to us. And yeah, it takes a village kind of to get us all on the same page.
Yeah, we were actually we were at a panel for a screening last week. And Annie Wang from the film, who is the co-founder of a company called Senball, made a really good point about sexual harassment. And she said that, like, by the time you can name it and, like, bring it to HR, it's probably gone way too far.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You're totally right. Those microaggressions, those little things that happen, those, like, looks or, you know, things that people have said, it's like you hold on to that, and they're so hard to quantify. So I think you're totally right. It's so hard.
Yeah, we do question ourselves a lot. Well, you mentioned being at a screening and on a panel recently. Maybe we should get back to this this whole movie thing that you have done, which is awesome.
So however we want to take this.
Well, we know that we could talk for hours. There's no doubt about that. So tell us a little bit about, so you had the blog and you were doing some of these interviews, and then you brought that to the screen. So tell us about some of those interviews. And I don't know, is there a particular interview that really kind of stood out for you, either that you really want everybody to pay attention to, or something that maybe even touched you personally, that you were just like, this is me that I'm interviewing?
Yeah, I mean, I will say I feel like that the this is me kind of statement about everything that we put into the film, you know, every single clip, every single frame, you know, even the imagery that we use, I edited the film. So I do feel like my heart is embedded onto every frame. And I don't think that there's one real, you know, interview or thing that kind of speaks to me more than others. I will say, like, we do a statistic around maternity and paternity leave. Mm-hmm. And when those statistics roll on the screen, the discomfort you can see at a public screening is so amazing. Mm-hmm. Everyone shifts in their chair. And, like, I think it's something that we don't realize as a community, basically the stats that rolls through all of the other countries' paternity leave, days of leave. And the United States is zero. So we're the only industrialized nation in the world that doesn't offer it. And I don't think a lot of people know that. So that's like, that for me is one of the standout moments.
Oh, yeah.
Want to talk about Zach and Annie?
Yeah, there's a really incredible part in the film. There are multiple incredible parts. But my favorite part is a conversation that happens between Annie Wang and her co-founder, Zach. And Annie's talking about, she's expressing discomfort about having to meet with a really big client that's worth multi-million dollars to them. And she's just not feeling like everything is, you know, really going well with this person. And she's just a little bit hesitant because of the money that they can bring into the company. And there's this moment where she asks Zach what she should do. And he just says, I trust you. I'm your business partner for a reason. And anything, the decision you make is the one that we go with. And I completely am with you and support you in whatever you choose to do. And it's just, we never see those conversations happen between men and women on screen. And it's kind of this moment where we see a very, you know, not only equal, but a kind of, a woman is very respected and very supported in her work, which is something that I think we all could be shown more of the time.
Oh, mm-hmm. Absolutely. We have what we call, within Tribe of Women, we have what we call the More Good Men movement. And we say that when we celebrate good men, there will be more. and exactly what you are talking about is, and the paternity leave is reflected because men have discrimination and the box that they are expected to live in as well, right? And society is creating those structures and those structures that are putting them there. And you even have, in addition to that, in the film, you also have a feature on your website called Your Moment of Ambition. And Stu Friedman talks about men as allies and, you know, why he's a feminist. And so is that portrayed? So tell us about your experience with More Good Men, just in the making of the film or in your life, and why you think that that's an important thread that we carry forward.
Yeah, I mean, I will say thanks for giving Your Moment of Ambition a shout out. We've loved putting together that series. It's basically footage that we couldn't include into Dream Girl, but we so wanted to share with our audience. And I love seeing a white man claim his feminism. I think having Stu kind of own that space is so incredible. And he's written so many books about work-life balance and how millennial men are getting more interested into childcare. So if you're not familiar with him, definitely check out his work because he's such an inspiration. And I had read like 3 of his books before he came on set, and he was like, "Are you sure you're like a fan of mine?" He like couldn't believe that all these women were like obsessed with him. It was so fun. He like felt like a rock star for a couple of hours.
That's great.
But I think for me, my husband has probably been, you know, the closest to me during the process, and also, you know, not only shows support and love for Dream Girl, but he also does the work and like literally does work for me. So he wrote all the music for Dream Girl. He was our brand consultant while we built the website. He does designs for us. I have him do calligraphy for us. So he's constantly adding value to our brand, which has been absolutely incredible.
That's great. Yeah. So his fingerprints are all over it, like yours are.
Yeah, and I would say that some of the most meaningful support I've received for Dream Girl has been from the men in my life. When the election happened last fall, we released the film online for free for a week just to make women feel seen and inspired and heard. And I had so many guys from high school all the way back to elementary school reach out to me and say, "This is such important work and this is such an important film to get out into the world." So it's been really meaningful to me to connect with the men in my life kind of from Dream Girl and conversations with them as well.
Yeah, and promoting that support is really key to that, and kind of getting away from the macho bad boy image that men think that I don't know, is attractive or they need to live up to. I think that there are a lot more good men out there than we're
giving credit for.
You know, it's great too. You talked about how you were raised by a strong woman, and I had that same experience kind of coming to the actual term of feminism later because my mother worked outside the home and I never doubted that I couldn't do that. But then my brothers and these other men that we're talking about were also raised by those women, right? And so I think it really is just all about how we portray the roles of women and men in our homes. And it's as simple as just allowing, I say that with air quotes, women to have jobs and to pursue their dreams. So good on all of those ladies that came before us.
Yeah, I would also say like something really interesting that happened just through my friend group. I hang out with a lot of young men, and when I started Feminist Wednesday, it was really fun to see them all go on their own feminist journey. And just because I was writing the blog and sharing women's stories, and they got access to women's lives in a totally different way.
Oh, yeah.
Super transformative. And one by one, they started calling themselves feminists and feeling more comfortable, you know, asking questions or being more vocal or even being advocates. So, you know, I think we can never underestimate the power of us just being a good example.
Exactly. Yes. And sometimes we just need the words. Mm-hmm. And the examples and the stories. That's awesome. Yeah, we've had very similar experience and we're embracing it fully. Mm-hmm. So in the stories that you've been telling and you've been collecting, and not just through the movie, but just kind of over time, what are the stories, what are some stories of women supporting or maybe even not supporting other women that you think that are important and that you want to make sure that we pay attention to? Is there even a theme or a collection or a pattern that you're seeing in the area of women supporting other women?
I mean, I think for me and my entrepreneur group, I belong to a support group of entrepreneurs, and we meet like once a month and have breakfast together. And, you know, I truly don't think I could have gone through this journey without them, because they not only they've been there for me emotionally, and like they totally get the ups and downs of the journey. They're also there to give me resources and contacts and advice. And I think in a world where women are starting 1,200 businesses a day and the level of VCs and mentors is so small, it's really hard for us to advance and, you know, build our businesses and elevate those networks when we don't have access to people who are looking out for us in a traditional sense of like a mentor. So I think peer mentorship for me has been one of the biggest, things that's helped me build my business, helped me find sanity. And, you know, even just like we continue to work together, like the women that did all of the stop motion animation in our film, they're from that little breakfast network. And we work with them all the time and we support their work all the time. And I think having that tribe of women that, you know, are looking out for you and have your back is super important.
Yes. And I think, we have different tribes, right? So you have this group of women that's supporting you in your endeavors, and they may or may not be close friends. And then you have, you know, the girlfriend that you go to knock on her door at midnight and cry on her lap on the couch. And then you've got this breadth and depth of different tribes that kind of surround you. And sometimes they overlap and sometimes they don't. How can women be supported in all of those different ways?
Yeah, I think I was talking about this with one of my friends last week. She works in fashion, and we were talking about women supporting other women, and she said, that's great and everything, but I do not experience that.
Yeah.
it's a harsh industry. It's very competitive. And she said, I haven't really had those mentor relationships with the women that I work with. So one of the things that I think is vital in that space is to have women in your life outside of work who see you and support you and hold that space for you in dealing with those women who maybe aren't as willing to put their hand down in order to lift you up. It's a reality, definitely. And I think that, you know, the more we talk about the importance of women supporting other women, I think it will become just the base level that we interact with one another, but we can't really deny or ignore the fact that there are very competitive industries where women are not encouraged to support one another and don't have avenues to access that support. So I think it's about finding other spaces where you can receive that love and encouragement and allow it to empower you when maybe it's not the easiest to fill it with people around you.
Right. Yeah, that makes total sense. And then one of the things that we talk about sometimes in our tribe talks is the difference between kind of being the woman who doesn't support versus boundaries, being a mean girl versus just setting boundaries for yourself. And that sounds like kind of where you're headed with that, too.
Yeah, definitely. It comes down to company culture. And I know my friend has since talked to one of her managers about Dream Girl and just kind of about, you know, it's really hard to change these huge companies and corporations, from the bottom up. But you can even just bringing those conversations into the workplace makes a difference. And we actually talk about this in Your Moment of Ambition through Joanne Wilson. And we talk about Queen Bee Syndrome, which is very similar to the Mean Girl Syndrome.
Thank you, yes.
Oftentimes, women feel the need to become queen bees because they think they're threatened and they're concerned about losing perhaps some of the power that they've garnered. So I think coming back to women supporting women, it's just really about making us feel less scarce and recognizing that we can all be abundant, we can all succeed, and we can all, you know, shine as bright as individuals as we can all together.
Yeah, I would also say, like, thinking about company culture, I feel like it's such a, like, a patriarchal narrative to have women pinned against each other. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how many of these companies where women don't feel seen, it's because they don't have women at the highest levels of leadership. Mm-hmm. And so that scarcity becomes a reality, mm-hmm. and the competitiveness becomes something that has to kind of permeate through the culture.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like obviously it's totally a reality for a lot of people, but I feel like it's probably because women aren't, you know, at the highest levels of leadership.
Yes, the examples are not there. Absolutely. So since we're talking about women supporting women, we can't ignore asking the question, what was it like to meet Oprah? What a dream.
It was my first, but now it's all becoming clear. It was incredible. I think meeting Oprah was and is probably one of the highlights of my life. I think, you know, to be able to attend the Super Soul sessions, which are just incredible. And then, you know, to be invited to a brunch with her where she honors the other Super Soul 100 was, it felt really out of body, honestly. It felt very strange and, but so fun and so lovely. And she was so warm and, I don't know. It was just an awesome experience. It's everything I think you want it to be when you're kind of face to face with her and able to share space with her. She's such a generous person, with like the energy and the attention that she gives you. She really like makes every person in her company feel, you know, like on her level, which is such a testament, I think, to just her spirit and her kindness.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an incredible opportunity.
Definitely a good culture. Good. Well, and I think that the, you know, when something like that happens, you say it's that out of body experience. We've talked about it before on previous podcasts and about imposter syndrome and like, is this real? And should I be here? Do I deserve this? I don't think that it's something that happens that a lot of people see externally. But I think it does happen a lot internally. And I am just imagining if I met Oprah, because I daydream about that a lot.
Be real. Yeah.
what that would feel like. And you would have, I feel like I would have this like pinnacle moment. And then I would just be like, well, there doesn't get better than that. I might as well just stop now.
Yeah. I mean, I think for us, the weirdest part of the Oprah situation was that we went before the film was finished. And so even though we had done the work and even though we had built the brand and we had this incredible, you know, momentum around like basically a movement around global women in leadership, we hadn't actually finished the film. And
no pressure.
I think as a director and as a creator, I think that weighed very heavily on my heart when I came home. I remember, you know, chatting with some of the guys who were part of Super Soul, and they were asking me about like if I was gonna, you know, extend my vacation in LA, and I was like, no, I'm getting on the first flight out of here. I flew home and I worked that weekend. I'm not kidding. I was so like, we got to get back to the work. We have to like, make this film, you know, as beautiful and as brilliant as I know it could be. So that pressure was not something that I could just kind of shake off totally.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Oprah is watching. Well, we love what you're doing with the web series that you have as well. One of the things that I can only imagine happens in collecting all of these stories, and we do a collection of tribe stories, but one of the challenges is how do you pick? How do you choose? How do you, from all of the footage that you got, how do you leave anything behind? And so you've started a web series that is made up of the outtakes and so that they don't end up on the cutting room floor. What can you tell us about those?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you gave a beautiful summary, honestly. I think we really just wanted to share the content. And I was actually at a screening in Buffalo, New York, and somebody asked the question about, you know, what happens with the footage now that the film is done? And I was joking, but I told the audience that I was going to burn it. And there was like an audible gasp in the crowd, and people were like visually very upset and disturbed. and And then I was like, oh my God, I'm just kidding. We're making a web series. And people started laughing. And I was like, oh, I guess we really actually have to do this now. This is something that people
right.
are.
So you keep putting yourself in a position where you have to follow through on things by meeting Oprah and announcing things at shows. Yeah.
So what impact of making this film has this film had on you personally, would you say? And this is for both of you, because you're kind of part of this whole thing, not just a movie anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a tough question because we're still so like in the momentum of what we're building, and we still have such big dreams for where we want Dream Girl to go. I feel like we've had such an incredible grassroots movement. You know, we've done over 200 screenings, you know, in North America and across the world, and that's incredible. And the amount of women whose lives that we've touched and that email us, it's been like, there really are no words. It's really incredible. But I will say it's hard to kind of step away or step back or have perspective on it because we're so still in it and because our dreams and goals are still so audacious. But, you know, I started writing a web series or a written series for Feminist Wednesday called A Gal's Guide to Making a Movie. Oh, and I was just able to like go back and, you know, tell my story and tell about the process of making the film. And it has been so rewarding to kind of revisit it. You know, 3 years later, I think I finally now have the perspective of, wow, like that was really crazy. And I can't believe we did that. So I think it's all kind of part of the process.
Yeah, hindsight is 2020. Absolutely. So, well, you mentioned screenings, and we are very excited that we've had a screening here in Northwest Arkansas, and we helped host a panel conversation. What are your plans for the film? You said you're still going. You've got audacious goals, which obviously is working for you. And so what are some of those goals, and what do you want women to be taking away from this film?
Yeah, our dream for the Dream Girl screenings is really for hosts to bring it to their communities and create space for women to have, you know, really important conversations. I feel like we don't get the opportunity to really dig in deep into the issues of what we're feeling, again, coming back to those consciously or not emotions. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yeah.
So really, the screenings are a way for people to create space for the people in their lives to talk about these issues. Mm-hmm. We're going to be launching digitally in the springtime so that people can bring the film to their living room and watch the movie over and over and over again online. But really, it's our dreams for the film are to continue with the screenings model and having these events set up in theaters around the globe to talk about Dream Girl and to engage with the issues. And go on to the next movie eventually.
Yeah, and I constantly, like, you know, we have a couple of film ideas and we're trying to figure out, you know, timing for the next one, fundraising for the next one. So kind of figuring out the details for the next film as well.
Sounds like a stay tuned moment. That's great. Well, our final question in all of our podcasts for all of our guests is, why do you believe in Tribes of Women?
Ooh, what a good question.
We've stumped them.
It's like, why not believe in Tribes of Women?
Exactly.
You know, I think for me, we don't have, you know, gender parity, you know, in pretty much any industry. And, you know, we're not going to get there on an individual level unless we are kind of band together and uplift one another and move forward together. I think there's so much work that needs to be done and so many glass ceilings that we need to shatter. And, you know, I think 10 bodies are stronger than one. So I think we need to form tribes of women in order to uplift and empower and inspire and support and, you know, do all the incredible things that our tribes do for us.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Diana, she gave bought you a little bit of time to think about it.
I think tribes of women have proven themselves time and time again to be resolved to uplift not only women and girls, but everyone in the world. It's been proven time and time again that when we empower women, other problems around scarcity cease to exist. And so I think I believe in tribes of women because I am the way I am because of the women in my life. Mm-hmm. And I just think that our power and our potential is limitless when we get together and brainstorm a new reality and a new future for the world. Yes.
Well, we love limitlessness and audacious goals. I think we're going to adopt that. We're going to adopt that mindset. It might even get us all the way to Oprah. Well, thank you so much. And we hope that you will become part of our tribe and we can become part of yours. And you can be found at dreamgirlfilm.com. That's wonderful. Thank you, ladies. And thank you for being here with us today. And we will talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks, ladies.
Yay. That's how I always feel after these interviews. I just want to say, yay.
I'm with you. I'm a big fan of being inspired to follow your dreams.
Yes. And our Tribe Stories segment we have coming up is all about some girls who know how to dream.
Some of the individual artists from the collective Song Suffragettes came to visit us, and we were really excited to share their stories.
We are. But first...
Yes, we need to thank our sponsors.
Our first shout out is to Elevate Performance and their peer advisory groups in the form of CEO, Elevate, and Emerging Leaders Forums, one-on-one coaching and advisory services, which we need. And they are keeping us at the top of our game, and we love working with them. And you can find them at elevateperformance.us. And we're happy to announce that we have a new marketing partner and sponsor, ModThink, and their results-driven digital marketing. So if you've been following us for a while, you've probably noticed how they are upping our game. If you have not been following us and recently found Tribe of Women or this Tribe Talk podcast, we have them to thank. Go team.
Go team.
You can find them and their mad skills at modthink.com, ModThink.com.
And we want to remind everyone that they can also help support us by going to the podcast tab at tribeofwomen.com and click Be a Patron to contribute to this podcast through Patreon.
Right on. And speaking of mad skills, we have been practicing ours with the collection of Tribe Stories.
Are you sure it's mad skills we've been practicing?
Okay. So we're totally making this up as we go. We'll just put that right out there. But we are gaining some mad skills and some incredible stories, some of which we have had the opportunity to share here on the podcast once per month during this, our Tribe Stories segment. Today, we have some ladies who should be familiar to our listeners.
I hope so. When we interviewed the ladies of Song Suffragettes on a previous episode, we mentioned that we would see them again at the Bentonville Film Festival, and we were thrilled to spend some time with them face to face.
It was great to put faces with names and voices and to hear each of them perform. They are each individual artist with such great personalities and stories of their own. But today, we have some of the interview that we recorded with five of the artists to share with you. We're hearing from Lena Stone, Savannah Kyes, Mignon, Lacey Cavalier, and Kaylee Shore.
They have lots to say, so let's get to it.
Let's do.
Well, first of all, so excited to be eyeball to eyeball with you guys.
Yes!
We love doing the podcast, but I will tell you that there is nothing like talking to people face to face. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Just for recording sakes, why don't we go ahead and go down the line, introduce yourself, and...
Well, hello. My name's Lacey Cavalier.
I'm Kaylee Shore.
I'm Savannah Katz.
Mignon.
And I'm Lena Stone.
Lena. So we had Lena and we had Kaylee on the podcast. Savannah and Mignon, you are new to Tribe of Women, but hopefully you all learned about Tribe of Women from...
We did.
Your sisters are here.
Yes.
So good. Well, we're really excited to have you here. When we learned about you, obviously... We were just like, well, they are a tribe of women, so we need to talk to them.
Yeah. Definitely. We just go in herds, everybody. Yeah.
And this is probably at Bentonville Film Festival, a big girl party for you all.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's like summer camp. pants.
No, exactly. I was telling them on the way down here, I didn't get to experience like the dorm life. And, you know, so for me, this is kind of like living in a dorm. Like we're sharing rooms, we're sharing bathrooms,
steamers.
Running around, yeah, steamers.
It's like fashion tape.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. One of us forgets something. It's like, do you have it?
Sticky bra.
Yeah. Exactly. You get to be very close very fast, yeah, which is fun.
So how long have you all known each other, do you think? I mean, you all have different relationships.
All married.
Yeah. I actually just met Lacey for this trip.
In the van on the way here.
Wow. But I've known you like probably. I just kind of met you.
Yeah.
We knew of each other last year. And I've known these two, Kaylee and Lena, for like
And Savannah was at our first ever Songs of Ocean.
Yeah. I came to support as a fan, which is kind of cool to then all of a sudden be asked to play in it. It's a really full circle moment.
Yeah.
So we've kind of known each other, like about each other.
And
like
we
played the same shows.
Yeah, totally.
So we kind of knew everything about each other's life. And then we got to actually talk about it in person, which was cool.
Yeah.
And the same thing for Lena and I. And then I met Mignon through a mutual friend at a show one time. And then we finally got to play together and got to really connect. And then Lacey and I met in a snowpocalypse eating
like
french fries at her apartment. She literally had no idea who I was. And I just showed up at her house with a couple friends and ate french fries and we got to know each other.
Yeah.
It was really great.
Well, one of the things we didn't get to dive into on the podcast was a little bit more about the industry and why Song Suffragettes exists. You're all individual artists, but you're coming together to support each other, and you have a showcase every Monday night. So far on the podcast, which was not very long ago, you had 160 women had gone through, and now you're up to
180.
That's awesome. So here we are at Bentonville Film Festival, which is all about celebrating women and diverse voices. So you fit in very well, even though you're not in the filmmaking industry specifically. So there are a lot of statistics going on about the filmmaking industry.
Yes.
But what we didn't get to talk about on the podcast and what would be great to talk about here is tell us about what the music industry is like and why Song Suffragettes exist to lift up women in the industry and why you think that it's important, especially at this point in time.
Well, I think you hear a lot about how, like, the tides are turning, and we always say that, and it's true because there are, we had two country females in the Best New Artist category at the Grammys this year, which is massive for women to be succeeding and also be succeeding so much into that upper tier. Everyone's really quick to point to that as an example and be like, oh, it's fine. There were two girls. I'm like, yeah, but there's literally only two girls. Like, and the statistics are still pretty bleak. I mean, like, literally the highest percentage of females on the Billboard country charts have been like 15%, and that's so generous. Like, I mean, what did you say this week it was? Like,
I think it's closer to 4 or 5%.
You're an economics major. You're better.
I am. I gotta use my degree for something. But it is, I mean, you know, and where so many of the younger women in country music who are coming up right now have played the Song Suffragette show. Kelsey Ballerini played our second show ever. Laura Delaney has played a bunch of our shows. She just had her first number one. Ray Lynn, all these amazing women. But I just named three, and those are kind of the ones who are having radio success. But I could name you 50 incredible female singer-songwriters in Nashville. So we're not seeing that translate to people with record deals and with songs on the radio when the songs are as good, if not better, than what you're hearing on country radio right now.
It's really interesting, too, because when you move to Nashville, I moved there a few years ago, and my biggest fear was, oh, my goodness, I'm not going to meet anyone my age that does what I do because it's so rare to come by. At least you're taught that. You know what I mean? Like, you go there and you see it's a very male-dominated genre, which I love, and I love that. I mean, it's really fun to watch and hear, but in the same breath, you're like, wait, where are my girls? Like, I want to hear songs that I can relate to as a female. And that's one thing that Song Suffragettes has done so well for me is connecting with my friends. I mean, I didn't know these girls when I first moved here, and now we're all writing together and we're hanging and we're supporting, you know, posting each other's music online. And that's also another thing that I think that people don't assume is that we're all friends and we're all supporting each other, and we're kind of showing them that that's not true. We all really love each other's music, and we're all very different in that way.
I think you want to, like, I mean, obviously you want to make it seem, no matter who you are, you want to make it seem like you support other women and you're nice to them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I can 100% confidently say that there is, like, no bad blood in Song Suffragettes. And it's, like, honestly surprises even me because we're all such good people, but, like, we all are trying to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like, took a step back the other day and I was like, holy shit, like, this is actually, like, these people are genuinely supportive because there's no room for competition. There really isn't. Like, you just, like, I feel like it has changed because when I first moved to town, I remember I encountered a couple mean girls, and I think everyone's just, like, learned, you know? And I even had, like, that jealous streak where I was like, oh, she's doing so much better than I am. I'm going to decide to hate her for no reason. And then I was like, I don't know if that's the best way to handle this, Kaylee.
I feel like you get to the point where it's like, there's room for everybody.
There
and
is,
we all do,
so different.
Yeah, we all do different things.
I think there's a misconception, too, that, you know, you're taught very early on that's, you know, it's like, oh, well, only one of us can make it. And that's so false. That is so false. I mean, there is, I can tell you just from like writing with some of these girls, it's like, you know, when they have success with a song, it's so exciting to celebrate their success. Mm-hmm. And it also just opens more doors for more females to have that similar success. And, you know, like Kaylee was saying, and Lacey was saying, we're all so different. And that's another thing that we've been, you know, fighting against as females is like, you know, you walk into a room and you say, I'm a female and I write, you know, country songs. They already have you as a stigma, mm-hmm. you know, they put you in a box immediately. And it's
okay, Taylor Swift.
Like, exactly. No, and that's a great, I mean, it's great to be compared to her, but in the same breath, it's like, it's cool to show them how different and what we can add to country music too, because we add a lot, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Lena and I wrote this song one time with our good friend Haley Steele. We wrote the song based on this quote that it was something about,
it said, you know, don't be upset when something good happens to your neighbor. It just means there's something good in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And, like, is that not the truest thing in the world?
Yes.
And, like,
yes.
I mean, honestly, because we all write together. And, like, I mean, Fight Like a Girl is a huge example. And, like, Lena, I mean, I have some songs on her next EP. And, like, that's going to open doors for everyone. Like,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, Savannah and I have written together. And Mignon and I have written together. And we still have to probably
tonight.
Later tonight. We were sound checking and playing some guitar chords. And Lacey started singing. And I was like, record that. We're going to write that.
We literally, yeah.
Can't turn it off, but
recorded the melody and we're like, we're right.
It's so true. And like I really like I surprise myself with how genuinely happy I feel when I see someone's doing something bigger than what I'm doing, because like, and I'm like, wow, what happened to that catty girl in eighth grade who, like, you know, people breed you to be competitive.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, how many times do we hear that a day that's like, wow, isn't that weird that, like, your best friends, like, you know, signed a publishing deal
Which
or whatever?
It's
like,
you hear it constantly.
Part of it is positive because it gives you that drive and the motivation
100%.
To, like, mm-hmm. kick butt. But the other side of it is just, like, being at peace where you are in each step of the way and being confident in what you have to offer.
I mean, it's so true. I mean, Lacey, for example, like just recently I was playing a show in LA and she just surprised me and she came and she was in the front row and supported it the whole time. And she did the same thing with our show earlier today. She was filming and she came out and it's
dancing,
just dancing
like
and then we all did it for each other too. Like when Lena's song Nervous came on, it's like, I get it stuck in my head all the time. And so we were like,
Savannah was dancing so much, I had to not look at her because I was worried I was going to start laughing on stage. I was like, don't look at Savannah.
But you're supposed to do that. You want to be each other's cheerleaders. It makes it worth it in the end.
Well, do you feel, so there's also, we get a lot of questions of, does that mean we have to like everybody? And the reality is that we're not going to be best friends with every single girl on the face of the earth, but that come across a lot of women and you've got a lot of women in your life. And how do you support each other as artists, as women? And, you know, and maybe you're not, you know, hanging out every night, but how does that look and how does that work?
I think, go ahead. No, go ahead.
We are about
we're
to
so
say,
excited.
I was about to say, I think.
Yeah. I saw this really cool quote, and I think it's a big part of what we do. It's it was really simple. It just said, "Girls compete, women empower."
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that the difference between girls and women is an age thing. I think it's a mentality thing and where you are at peace with yourself, because you don't have to be everybody's best friend. That's, you know, that's not
impossible.
Everyone's different.
It's impossible.
And, yeah.
But if you are at peace with yourself and you are empowered and you love what you do and you love yourself, then it's very easy to look at someone else and say, hey, you know, that's not my cup of tea, but good for her because she's doing it and that's her and she's owning it.
Mm-hmm.
And I respect that.
I have this rule when I meet people, and I don't say anything out loud. I just do it in my head, where I pick three things I like about them instantly.
Yeah,
just because, you know, at the end of the day, like when you have a conversation with somebody, you might not gel in a writing room. It happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can do is stand back and appreciate their art, because we're all fighting the same battle together.
Yeah.
Well, I think that with music is it is so subjective. And like, I think, you know, sometimes I hear a song and I'm like, wow, I don't connect to that. Doesn't mean it's bad. Doesn't mean it's like, you know, terrible. They're not talented. Honestly, everyone in Nashville is talented. There's not a single person who isn't.
Everyone
does make it easy because no one truly sucks, you know?
Yeah.
But like, if you connect to it, it's just, it's not their fault. It's the fault of your life experiences and what you've been through. If you hear a song and you don't relate to it, great. That doesn't mean nobody else does.
Mm-hmm.
I think a good way to look at it is like, you don't have to like everything. You don't have to like everyone, but you have to not undermine and be manipulative and purposely try to get people to, you know, trip on their their path.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of respecting everyone.
Absolutely.
Respect is a huge part. Yeah.
And I mean, I think too, essentially, that life is a party, you know? You walk into the room and you're going to meet a lot of people at the party, but there's only going to be a few that are going to stay after. They're going to help you clean up your messes. Mm-hmm. They're going to make you laugh. They're going to make you want to dance and stick with you even if it's not fun for a
second. You should write a book.
Yeah. Like hands in the
or music. Yeah.
And I think that's very true with what we do. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about music and connections. So kind of building on what you were talking about, Kaylee. And, you know, obviously we are collecting tribe stories is what we call them. And because we find that that's where people connect. So you all are songwriters. And so tell us a little bit about that process and story writing and where it comes from and why it's important that it comes from
a female perspective.
Should probably just go down the line.
Yeah,
yeah,
for real.
Yeah.
You go.
Oh gosh, this time I don't have an answer. Well, I mean, I think we all come at songwriting and storytelling a little bit differently, depending on like how old we were when we started writing and kind of what our influences are. But I think one of the things that's so powerful, you know, we just played this event for the Women's Shelter and these incredible women who have been so brave and so strong. And some, you know, we were encouraging some of them to start, you know, writing, maybe telling their own stories, whether it's poems or, you know, just writing in a diary. And that's super important for yourself to be able to get your own thoughts out. But there are some thoughts or feelings that you have that you don't even realize you have until someone else says them to you.
Yeah.
And so like an example for me is the song, The House That Built Me by Miranda Lambert. That's my number one song that I wish that I had written.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And the year that I moved to Nashville, my parents moved out of the house that I grew up and spent my entire childhood in. So it was like, not only was I moving, but when I came home, like home wasn't home anymore. And that was around when that song came out. And I knew that I felt that way, but I didn't know how to say it. I think I was too close to it to like describe it for myself. Mm-hmm. And then I heard that song and I was like, well, yeah, that's it. That's exactly how I wish that I had said it. So while I think that like storytelling is important for ourselves, I also think being music fans and like appreciating other people's songs and being able even to hear each other's songs and say, wow, Mignon wrote this song and I didn't know that I felt that way until she sang it. Or I didn't know that's how I felt about that ex-boyfriend of mine until she said it. And then I was
thanks
like,
for bringing it up.
Yeah.
Old wound, just dagger.
Yeah. I personally connect with like the more emotional songs, like more like sad songs, like sad love songs. And not to say that I have like a bad love life, like I have a great love life.
We do.
Yeah.
We are the only sad love life.
But I grew up like doing a lot of musical theater when I was younger, and so I don't know if that's where I like draw that emotion from, but I tend to write about just like situations that I've seen and like my friends or like read about or like watch a movie about. You know, sometimes I'll even like go on Pinterest and just like look at quotes and just like we find like
one.
Yeah, I think we all do that. We find like little song ideas just from like quotes that we see on Pinterest. And so yeah, that's like mainly where I draw my inspiration from. And like again with The House That Built Me, that's like my all-time like wish I could have written that song. Similar experience with my home. I moved to Nashville about 9 years ago and my whole family moved with me. We left the house that we literally my parents built from the ground up. So my family moved for my career.
No pressure.
So yeah. But I was able to see, like, because I've been living in Nashville for so long, since I was 14, when I first got there, there was no issue with females in the industry.
That's
like
true.
It was, females were fine. Like it was equal. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was like, you know, this is a good chance for him. Like Taylor Swift had just opened up a door. So I had no worries about it. And then like, I saw the change. Like I saw women start dropping off. I saw like the start of bro country and I saw everything happen. And it was just like, what's going on? And like, am I like, should I still be doing this? And it's going to be a lot harder, but like definitely song suffragettes and organizations like this are just so great now. And again, being from Texas, it's like so competitive down there.
Oh yeah.
So competitive. And so like, I come from that mindset, but like, I just cannot have that mindset anymore, like at all. And I don't. And
it hurts. It hurts your heart.
You feel ugly. And just when somebody else does great, like someone that we don't know, it's like, that's okay. Like that means that
it's
we're
changing.
It's going to be great for us in the future. So I totally like rambled off.
No, that was incredible. No, 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 no.
go for it.
That was incredible.
Yeah, but I think like everyone can find like inspirations like from their own life. When you're a songwriter, you don't have to live through the songs that you write. I think Carrie Underwood even was like, you know, because her songs are like so
she
much about
kill
like,
she
like,
does,
like
you don't know, she's so strong. She totally could.
She talks about how like how when she's on the stage, she's like a completely different person. She has like two versions of Carrie Underwood, and like when she's off the stage, she's this quiet, shy person, and when she's on stage, she's like a totally different person, almost like she's acting. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I connect with that more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, I started co-writing songs when I was 13, and I hadn't really experienced a lot of life yet, and so I had watched movies and TV shows and I read books and just to try to, you know, pull inspiration from that. But it wasn't until I was 16 and actually moved to Nashville that I experienced, you know, heartbreak and moving away from home and all the scariness of that. And I finally was able to connect with people in writing rooms. And it was a very different experience for me because for the longest time, my ability was measured by my age. And that's a really scary thing to walk into a room of adults and try to prove yourself, especially when you have nothing to write about yet. And so when I was 16, that was kind of like a turning point with me. And I connected with a smaller group of writers and I just started writing with them over and over and over again. And I was able to finally be vulnerable in a room. And that's really hard for me to open myself up. And so, you know, that completely changed the writing world for me. And now I can't help but be transparent, whether it's in a room or on stage, because, you know, watching people like Miranda Lambert when she's up there and she tells her stories very honestly. I remember I watched a show of hers a few years ago and I just said, I need to be able to do that on stage. I need to be able to get to a place that I'm comfortable enough in my songwriting and as an artist that I can do that. And it's been incredible. And for me, one of the songs that I wish I would have written is that Drops of Jupiter. Because that song, as a songwriter, if you've heard him discuss the song, there's so many different layers of emotion and things that have happened that are tragedies in his life that kind of shaped that song. And, you know, reading it down, you can tell, but when you're just listening to it, you think it's just like this one
like
seamless
thing.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's,
oh, it's Drops of Jupiter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and it's such an incredible thing. And also, I also, you know, really look up to Ryan Tedder because he's not very genre specific. And every time I walk into a room, although I do know who I am as an artist, I try to do what's best for the song because there is an energy in the room every day.
Yeah.
And whether you're writing with the same people you write with weekly or people that you're just now meeting, there is a song that is going to be born in that room and you have to do what's best for the song at the end of the day. And I think that he does that very well.
Yeah, I'm running out of answers on
you guys. I'm like very overwhelmed with something
hot. I'm hearing all these key words. I'm like, dang it.
Like, honestly, and I mean, I feel like this, like, just what we're doing here, just like kind of talking through who you are is like such a great way to find yourself. And we've done so much of that through Songs of Vedettes, getting on stage and telling our stories and doing interviews through Songs of Vedettes and all the opportunities they've opened. Like, I feel like every time I do an interview, I like get closer to like who I am, which sounds so cheesy, but I like, you
it
know,
doesn't. No,
even
it's
if
so
you
true.
Feel good, you're like,
it does.
Oh,
yeah,
well,
sometimes you're like releasing your emotions. You're literally
like
speaking.
Exactly.
Sometimes
truth.
You say things that you didn't know that you felt.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden you say it and you go, whoa.
Well, that's what songwriting has always been for me. It's been taking the jumble in my head of how I feel and like anxieties and pressures and all that and just like trying to put it down concisely and structurally on paper. And that really helps me because I feel like I'm constantly fighting being type A and type B and like finding a way to organize all the chaos like of that is emotion. I mean, for everyone. And that's why I love songwriting was I could take something really terrible that wasn't tangible at all and it was just like a feeling in my heart or my head or whatever and just taking it out and making it into something I could literally hold on a piece of paper and literally carry around with me and play for people. And that really helped. It made the emotions feel more real and it made, you know, me feel better about them because I could work through them. I mean, it's like, it's self-therapy. It really is. And I remember being a kid and writing like the dumbest songs. Like, I mean, I think I was telling you this, the teddy bear.
Yes.
So I remember, this is like kind of funny, but I do this on a more dramatic level these days, but like I was turning 10 years old and I thought that 10 was like the threshold, like you couldn't play with Barbie dolls anymore. And I was really upset about it. Like I was really angry. And I was like, I just want to be a kid forever. And I was like, I want to be 10 now. This is terrible. So I wrote this song called like My Teddy Bear. And it was like a farewell to me. And it was so ridiculous.
Kaylee's been overly dramatic her whole life.
Yes.
It's not just now.
What would I do if I worked in a bank? I mean, like, at least this is, like, acceptable. Kind of. Like, if I'm dramatic for a songwriter, you know, But so I was always working through my emotions that way, just, like, growing up. And I mean, I remember writing songs, you know, about my dad leaving when I was, like, 7. And that's really sad for a 7-year-old to have to do that. And I remember my mom trying to explain, like, he does love you, he just doesn't know how to show it. And me just, like, you know, I'm trying to explain that to a 7-year-old. And I'm trying to explain it to myself and work through it. And writing, you know, helps so much. Like, just having that outlet, no matter how much the song sucked, just putting it on paper. I keep this notebook from when I was 9, like, locked in a closet. Because I'm like, if anyone ever finds this, they're going to be like, you're out of the music industry. Like, these are the worst songs. But so I feel like that's always been really helpful for me, just to be able to, like, the structure of it and stuff. And, like, it's the same way, like, for other people, like, sending a text to your best friend and, like, venting. You take your emotions, you get them out, and you can see them in front of you and read them back. And it makes you feel a lot more at peace.
Sometimes you can let them go that way once they're out of your own head.
Exactly.
It.
That's why, you know, from the beginning of time, even people who aren't writers write their ex-boyfriends letters. They write, you know, letters when people pass away. And, like, it's such a tangible thing. And to be able to connect that with music has just been so healing for me. And to get to do it with my best friends has been, like, amazing, too. And these girls are all so talented. And we all have such a unique story. And they intersect, but they're all so different.
I'll try to keep this short-winded, but I was going to talk a little bit about, like, the pressure in Nashville about having the song and the melody and the hit thing. And, like, and how I feel like, for me, I've been there 4.5 years. I'm 20 years old. So kind of growing up amongst that and wanting it so bad that you tend to lose what you want to say, and you just think of it as this, like, hit song rather than transparency and your authenticity. And so now that I've put out music and performed that music and tried to make connections, but my connection wasn't truly there. I mean, it was on certain songs, but there's others that, like, I look back and I go, was that for me or was that for I don't know, for a jam. Like, and I think the artists that I connect to the most are, like, John Mayer, Tori Kelly, Ed Sheeran, Gavin DeGraw, like, very songwritery artists that when you listen to one of their songs, you leave with questions going, I want to know who they were talking about, or that you feel like you know them better. And I think for me, like, moving forward, which I live my life in a very, like, what you see is what you get. I'm a very transparent, like, person. And so for me, the fact that that wasn't coming through as much as I wanted in my music was huge. And so moving forward, I think the mentality of writing for me is very, like, yeah, just honest and transparent, as my favorite artists are. And I want people to, like, listen to my record, and not in, like, a vain, selfish way, be like, I want them to know more about me. But I feel like when people connect is when they know more about one another, and when they show their vulnerabilities, whether or not they're ugly. Like I said, we've all been through stuff, and for me, I just got out of, like, a 2-year-long relationship that was absolutely awful. And I'm like, I'm like, I can't sugarcoat that all the time.
I love what you said about having the song and, you know, the pressures of that, because I have been told so many times, and I know we all have, that it's like, you need the song, you have 3 minutes to have success. And it's like, but some of our favorite artists that are, like, legacies and icons in our eyes, it's not, it doesn't feel like 3 minutes. It feels like you've been taken on a journey.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really important to remind yourself of, because we all get caught up in that in the room. It's like, wait, that's not hooky enough, or that's not this enough. And then all of a sudden you've taken this. I had this song idea that I remember I was telling you about.
I wish you wrote it with me. I'm so angry.
I know, and I won't say it, just because, like, I don't want to rub anyone the wrong way, but I was so sad that I took it into that room, because it was a really, really special one in my heart.
Yep.
And I tried so hard, and they were trying so hard to make it this radio song. Oh. And it just wasn't that. Okay. It needed to be something that was just vulnerable. I don't even care if it had the same structure as some of the songs that we listened to. It just needed to be written down. And I was so disappointed in myself because of what it could have been.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a lesson learned, and you just kind of move on from that point, and you grow and experience more.
And that's the point. I think that radio, like, will move towards that stuff too, because, like, humans want to hear that, you know. And there's something to be totally said for, like, you know, the Call Me Maybes of the world. I love them, and there's a science to it.
I mean, you gotta get ready to something.
And I love that. And we write some of those songs too, and I even think that, you know, that song, it's still empowering. It's like, but I think radio will move towards it. I mean, that we had Burning House was a number one.
I was just about to bring that up. That was
House,
like,
That Built Me. I mean, you know, every little thing by Carly
Burning House was Cam's, like, first, like, thing on the radio.
like that actually.
And she tried a few other songs.
She tried, but like Burning House broke through for her, and that song is definitely
it
not.
It breaks all the rules.
It breaks every single rule in Nashville.
You know, it's,
and in country music, it's just it's amazing to see a song like that. That's such like a songwritery song, yeah. And I think we were all just like amazed, like wow, this like, song is being played on radio right now by a brand new female artist.
Oh, totally, yeah.
That kind of stuff is like what we want to happen more. Mm-hmm. So,
and what's brilliant about that song too is like it's so weird and it's so songwriter, but at the same time, like Savannah was saying, sometimes people try to make things so hooky and so catchy. And that song literally says, I had a dream about a burning house. You were stuck inside. I couldn't get you out.
But that's how she would sit down and tell her
friends.
That's
how she would say
that. Yeah, exactly.
Like, you had a coffee. Like, that's how you would say that to that person. And, like, it's obviously there's a beautiful, haunting melody and that really awesome guitar part that Kaylee spent, like, 3 months learning how to play. There's such a simplicity to it. And I think, you know, the same thing with The House That Built Me. So many of the, like, you know, Just to See You Smile, which is, you know, not a female song, but it's a, you know, my favorite
song. That's a good song, yeah.
It is so simple, and I think that's, you know, country music ultimately is three chords and the truth, and I think the more we speak our own truths, the more mm-hmm. that whether it sonically sounds like pop, the more country it is.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, you know, it's a woman's podcast, but we spend 30 minutes on one question. Sorry.
I knew you had a good one. I was like, please, if you have a joke.
Oh, yeah. I held on to that one for about 5 minutes.
But it's yeah, I mean, like, we have so many opinions.
I know.
So.
Well, I think so much of what you're talking about, even though you're talking about music and you're talking about the industry, you're actually talking about humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah.
Human,
yeah.
And the vulnerability and that perfection paralysis. Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
oh,
when you're trying to make it
perfect.
That's
such a good way to put it.
You're just
yeah.
like,
I love what you just
start
said.
To shut down.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's write that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Why I was planning to write that title.
It was the authentic connection that people are craving.
Totally. And I think what you just said was really interesting because, I mean, honestly, like these are things that these are rules and trends that we're starting ourselves. To
yeah.
be honest, I mean, like these things start in the rooms that we're writing. So if just the five of us and everyone else at Song Suffragettes can slowly in each room turn that over, you're going to hear it in the next
that's
year.
Like,
and it's amazing.
That's the battle and
yeah.
the beauty of it is like you, the people
talking,
like
yeah.
the development that they talk about. Yeah. The development and the finding yourself is really just you getting out of your head and moving out of your own way, because me,
I'll sit down
in a room and I'm like cracking more jokes than I am like being honest, because I'm scared to go there because I'm like, oh, I just met this person. Like they're going to think I'm crazy.
Yeah.
And so I think breaking down those walls and saying, you know, at the end of the day, I want the best song and I want it to be the most honest and what's going to connect with people is the most important thing, instead of just, yeah, we're
pretending
selfish in that
okay.
way of
yeah.
just like
yeah.
of
worrying about
trying to hide.
Thing.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be.
The reality is what you're putting out there, you know, someone somewhere
yeah.
has had that experience and is going to, because it happened to you.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
some people are telling their actual real truth and,
mm-hmm.
and very much what you said about that self-love
mm-hmm.
journey and
yeah.
the fact that when you are accepting of yourself, then you can be more accepting of other people and just be like, you do you, and you want that in return, but you have to be
mm-hmm.
pretty raw in order to get there.
I think it's important, like if we're deciding to step up and want this as our careers and our lives, then we have to be conscious of the fact that like that is our role,
mm-hmm.
is
yeah.
to be the honest one and to be the transparent one, and whether that means we get the backlash and the embarrassment or the judgment, like whatever it is, most of the time you don't, because people are like, heck yes, that's me.
I think
but,
people at their core like don't want to be judgmental.
Right.
I think you learn it in middle school.
Society.
Mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, you know, the core people crave that connection and that's what they want. And, you know,
and they
want
to be heard.
And that's
I think
why,
that's the majority
yeah.
of it. Yeah.
And I think with Song Suffragettes, like you were saying earlier, you don't have to like everybody, but the thing about Song Suffragettes is all of us do have something really major in common that connects all of us, so it is really easier to like, it's so easy to like everybody
exactly.
because there's that one
you
thing we have
yeah.
that's music.
Yeah, and how amazing would it be if we could just take that to the next level and be like, you're a woman, I'm a woman,
cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
Thank
exactly.
you. That's
yeah.
what it should be for sure.
Yeah.
Gosh, I love those
mm-hmm.
women. So much talent and fierce female vibe in one room.
I agree. I can't wait to get to Nashville to see them perform. But I did find out that in the meantime, we can watch the live stream of their Monday night shows on Periscope. So I'll be checking that out.
Oh, awesome. you have to go to listen to their songs. All of our listeners do, which are their stories, and they're so powerful. We will be sharing some video clips of our time with them at the Bentonville Film Festival on our social media channels, so keep an eye out for them there and in the future, because I think that we have a lasting bond with these ladies and their stories. Do you believe in Tribes of Women? Join the movement in our newsletter at tribeofwomen.com and be the first to learn about upcoming podcast guests, product releases, events, and giveaways. Find, subscribe, and rate the Tribe Talk podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and other major platforms, and share it with your tribe. Then follow us for inspiration, information, events, and more on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram using @tribeofwomen. This is Tribe of Women.
Lorraine Mosier,
Courtney Lawless,
Laurie Marshall,
and Amy Robinson. Thanks for listening.